Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out UnitedHealthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Chapter 16, Professor Trelawney's Prediction. Harry's euphoria at finally winning the Quidditch Cup lasted at least a week. Even the weather seemed to be celebrating. As June approached, the days became cloudless and sultry, and all anybody felt like doing was strolling into the grounds. I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And I'm Matt Potts.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Vanessa, for subscribers to our Patreon this week, we have a wonderful Every Flavored Bean segment. Our beloveds, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and all the rest of the crew are in the midst of their exams at Hogwarts. And you and I have some exam experiences, and we're going to discuss some of our favorite exam experiences in our Every Flavored Bean segment.
I also just want to say, for those of you who are supporting us on Patreon, you're going to hear some amazing bloopers this week. I stumbled over the second word in the opening quote, and Matt couldn't figure out how to say the word subscribe. And of course, if you do not subscribe to our Patreon, we are still just so glad that you're here. Matt, you are telling us a story this week on the theme of rest. What story would you like to tell me?
This is early in my work at Harvard as a professor. After I joined the Divinity faculty, I think this is from my second or third year teaching. And I had not yet figured out, I'm not sure I still have yet figured out, but I certainly at that time I had not yet figured out how to sort of manage my workload well. And at various times of the year, I would get very, very busy. And often when I get very busy, one of the things that I fail to prioritize is rest. And this was in spring, and I was also working at a church at the same time as I was teaching at the Divinity School, and it was coming up on Holy Week, which is kind of the season of the most significant kind of Christian observances and holidays, usually in April sometime, late March maybe. And so it was right in the middle of the semester, was right in the kind of heaviest part of the semester. It was the morning, one morning in the middle of the week, I was making breakfast for the kids. The kids were small then. I think Danny was not yet two or maybe barely two. Cammie was just in kindergarten. Sam was in between. And I decided to make some scones for the kids. I like to make scones. They come together pretty easily for me. It seemed like a fairly straightforward thing. I popped them in the oven. The scones are ready to come out of the oven. And Sammy and Cammie were standing in the kitchen. And I opened up the oven door and I bent over to grab the tray of scones. And as I bent over, something in my back just very assertively announced to me, no. and I very assertively screamed at the top of my lungs and fell on the floor because I was in serious pain. Like, I'd thrown out my back before, but never like at this level of kind of discomfort. And Colette came down and I was like, first, get the scones out of the oven because if they overbake, they'll be dry. Right? That's the first thing. So get the scones out of the oven. And then second, basically, the only solution was for me to lay on the floor. I couldn't be moved. Colette just kind of took the children somewhere else so they wouldn't have to watch me writhe in pain. And I was on my back for, you know, 3 or 4 days. But what did happen is I slowed down that week. This is the week before Holy Week. And I slowed down and I got some rest. And I think the way I read this, looking back upon it, is I think it was my body just sort of demanding that I slow down. I was sort of refusing to slow down, refusing to take some rest. And what I've learned since then is, you know, it's times of stress, times of overtiredness and overwork when I get these sort of injuries that crop up and lay me low. And the way I respond to them is the way I should have been at behaving beforehand, which is I'd stop and I have to just kind of pay some attention to my body.
Yeah, Matt, that is one of the things that I find so interesting about our society, right? That we only respect rest when it is physically required, and then we actually have to rest longer than if we had preemptively rested. Our bodies literally eventually are like, sorry, you literally have no choice but to stay in bed.
I think that's right. And that's why I tell the story, because I was looking into the etymology of the word rest. And it has a fairly interesting etymology. It's not super precise, but they think that the word rest comes from an old Norse word that was a measure of distance, which is like, well, after you go this far, you have to rest. It seems like in that culture, there was just a presumption that a certain amount of expended energy required rest, that rest was as certain and as measurable as time or distance, right? And like, I think you're right. I think that's something that we've lost in our culture, at least in the way I approach my work life, right? It's go until somebody gives you some time off or you find some time off, not go until you need to take a break, because everybody needs to take breaks, right?
Yeah. I love that etymology. It's something that took me a really long time to figure out about Google Maps, is it tells you how long it's going to take you to get somewhere as if you never needed to buy gas.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, but my car literally needs rest. Forget that I will need to go to the bathroom, right? Like, my car needs refueling.
Yeah.
And it's like, we just don't figure in those things.
Yeah.
And I do. I find it so interesting when our bodies force us to figure in those things. And I love that the Norse culture was so much smarter than we are now with all of our smart technology. They were like, obviously, this is how you do it.
Like, the most accurate way for us to measure distance is how many times you had to stop and take a water break. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I had to take 3 breaks to get here. Oh, boy, that must have been pretty far. Right? That's a great, I mean, it says something not just about how far you traveled, but also, like, about what our bodies need and what it takes to do stuff. Right?
Fascinating. Okay, well, Matt, I measure 30-second recaps in the fact that I do not need to rest. I can power through.
Vanessa, are you ready?
I'm ready.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hermione is just studying so hard and it's beautiful out and nobody wants to study. And Percy is really stressed because of the NEWTs, and even the twins are studying, and it's time for finals, and finals are hard, and Trelawney has a prediction that the Dark Lord is going to rise again, and then Buckbeak is going to get executed, and so the kids go down to take care of Hagrid. Hermione has to steal the invisibility cloak, and they go down, and oh my god, Scabbers is in the milk bottle, and then the executioner comes, and they take Buckbeak out, and then you hear the slice of Buckbeak's neck.
Thought of the axe.
Poor yeah. Buckbeak. I will say, I remember so vividly reading this book for the first time, and I did not gasp, but my jaw did literally drop. I was like, what? I can't believe she actually killed Buckbeak. Okay, on your mark, get set, go.
So Harry's still very happy about Quidditch finals, but they're sad about finals, and they're studying, and they go to some finals, and Hermione has too many, and they go to Dark Arts, and Hermione sees the Boggart turn into McGonagall, and then they go to the other ones, and then they go to Trelawney's, and Trelawney gives a prediction, a real prediction, and they're very scared, and then they go there's Fudge shows up, and they go to Hagrid's, and Scabbers is in the milk jug, and they walk away, and they hear the thud. Oh boy, that went badly. Whew. There are some things that I thought we should get to that were not in yours, and I spent too much time on them. The Boggart and Fudge. Those are the two I thought.
You did wonderfully.
I think you did wonderfully also.
You're a prince among men. So Matt, to me, the most obvious place of rest in this chapter is that Trelawney gives her first authentic prediction that we see, and it only happens when she falls asleep. Which it's arguably as to whether or not she's actually falling asleep, right? Or this is what it is like to have, like, be possessed by seeing the future. But what she experiences it as if she has fallen asleep. So what happens is Harry is in there and he is doing his final exam. Trelawney right. has decided that the final exams are going to be one by one. And Harry and she have this really interesting conversation that I also think we should talk about. about Harry's prediction is that Buckbeak is going to get away. And Trelawney is really upset that he's having such a non-bloody prediction. And that is interesting in its own way because Harry's prediction ends up being true. But then we get this, like, quote unquote, real prediction from Trelawney. And the way that she experiences the prediction, of course, being that a friend of the Dark Lord's going to return to him and therefore the Dark Lord will rise again. The way that Trelawney experiences it is as if she fell asleep. And that is something I'm excited to jump into this more with you. But I think this is something that many of us can relate to, right? Where finally you're in the long car drive by yourself. And that is when you are able to solve a problem that you have been busily working on, or when you're in the shower, right? When you can't do anything else, when you are at rest, that is often, at least when I have ideas and solutions to problems that I've been carrying with me for a long time. And I'm wondering if you think that that's the right way to look at this moment with Trelawney and her quote unquote falling asleep and having this prediction.
That's really interesting. I didn't read it that way just because it seemed like she passes into some state, right?
Yeah.
And I just didn't really make much of the fact that she experienced it as sleep. But you're right, she experiences it as sleep, right? So to her, it feels like she just dozed off, which then I think you're also right, and makes one wonder, like, well, how is this different from rest? When you read about sort of reports of like brain function and so forth, and it says that, like, you know, often when there's a problem that your active brain can't solve, turning that problem over to your unconscious, your passive brain, actually allows you to arrive at a solution because your active brain gets caught in sort of pathways of understanding, and you need to break out of that to do that, right? And sort of turning your attention to something else is a form of rest, taking a walk or doing something else, even if you're not, you know, reclining or sleeping, is giving the problem a rest so that some other less stressed or less exercised part of your brain can work on it. But it's also true with sleep. You know, I remember when I was playing instruments as a young person, you know, you practice and practice and practice and make a bunch of mistakes, and then you sleep on it, and the next day you can play through the piece without mistakes. And that, you know, again, there's research about this that just says that while you sleep, your brain kind of casts off all the bad stuff and retains all the good stuff. And you need the rest to do that. Like, actively engaging with the work does not let you arrive at the solution. And when I go through all this and I think about Professor Trelawney, and I think it's clear from the books that she has some predictive gift. It's also clear that she works really hard to promote the idea that every word that comes out of her mouth is an act of divination. And it's when she's not trying, when she gives it a rest, when she gives the act a rest, or unwittingly just sort of moves into this trance-like state, which she experiences as rest, that the actual predictions come true. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting read and a really interesting way to apply this week's theme to that scene.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder whether or not Trelawney constantly trying to make predictions is her version of practicing the piano and getting it wrong all the time.
Ooh.
Or
ooh, nice.
If most of the time she's acting irresponsibly and just like making wild claims, right? And it's really hard to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I know that people talk about writing as if all writing is productive, even if you end up just trashing pages.
Yeah.
I think a lot of writing, even when you end up trashing pages, is productive. I do not think all of my writing is productive. I think sometimes I'm rewriting the same thing I wrote a million times,
yep,
and I'm just stuck in that loop. And what I actually need is the rest. And so Trelawney, by like forcing kids to make stuff up again and again by staring at your crystal balls, like that could either be seen as her being really dogmatic and, you know, just exercises in futility.
Yeah.
But then Parvati walks out from this exam really having had some sort of experience where she feels as though she really saw something. And I think if she had totally not seen something and Trelawney said she had, Parvati would know within herself that that was true. And so maybe there is something to this divination thing. We see it in this chapter that there's something to it.
Yeah.
And so when something is futile and you're just banging your head against the wall versus when it's something productive is very, it's very hard to discern. I know for you, right? Like baking is often where you do a lot of your creative thinking. But that morning, baking was the straw that broke the minister's back.
That's right. That's exactly what it was. Writing is a great example because I think that all writing is productive is great advice when you have writer's block and you can't write anything. Then just getting into the habit and getting working was what you need. But you can also like write yourself into bad habits and just replicate those habits over and over again. And that doesn't help. That just kind of perpetuates the habit. And then when you have someone like Trelawney, who has children in her class, whose deaths she is happy to predict in that space, right? I feel like there's some power and weight to those predictions. You can't just throw those around, even if the practice is important, right? Like if I felt it was really important to practice archery and all my archery practice actually made me a better archer, there would be some times when I should not be practicing archery, right? Like it's just dangerous sometimes. And so even if
On the airplane,
don't practice there. Don't practice archery on the airplane. No.
Don't do that.
I really like this idea. It's a much more generous reading than I was willing to give Trelawney. I really like this idea that her attempted predictions, her constant attempted predictions, are not just obnoxious. They are also good faith attempts to practice a gift that she does have and is trying to cultivate. Right? It's a really generous reading of Trelawney, and so it's one I want to hold on to. But I think we also can observe that she does not practice carefully, and she knows the effect it has upon her students because she's perfectly willing to accept the adulation of Lavender and Parvati, and also perfectly willing to kind of stress out and frighten people like Harry with dire predictions.
And Neville. She has a prediction that Neville is going to fall downstairs and hurt himself, right? She's like threatening him. She's like, if you tell other people what was on the exam, you're going to experience severe bodily harm.
Yeah.
Which is a threat and is also like not how you teach kids not to cheat.
It's also, I mean, if you know Neville very much, at least as he presented in the book, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like if you tell a child like Neville that you're going to trip down the stairs, then he will get nervous and anxious every time he goes downstairs, which increases the likelihood that he's going to trip down the stairs. It doesn't seem wise or good.
No, she's definitely practicing archery with a fire bow on
that's right, a flaming
an
arrow.
Airplane sometimes.
Yes,
yeah.
A flaming arrow.
That's what
on
I
an
meant.
Airplane.
Not a bow, a flaming arrow.
So one of the places in the chapter where there is not rest, where we can kind of talk about rest by implication, is right at the beginning of the chapter, they're turning away from the Quidditch final towards their coursework finals, and Harry and Ron find Hermione's exam schedule.
Yes.
And what we see is that she has four exams, which are scheduled over two exam sessions. So she has two simultaneous exams twice. And the boys, you know, question her about this, and she's very impatient with them. And they say to her, this can't be right. And she looks at it and she's like, of course it's right. Stop bothering me, right? And it is right. They just don't realize that she has the ability to time travel.
Right.
Hermione's not resting enough.
No.
Her stress level is very high. I think all of us readers are concerned about her. I think it's played for laughs, I think, in the text. But when the boggart that she confronts in her last challenge in the dark arts exam is McGonagall telling her that she has failed, it's a little bit sad, right? Because McGonagall is the one who gave her the time turner, right? So she is feeling all this pressure. She's placing it upon herself, but she's also feeling it from her head of house and from this important professor at the school where she wants to do so well. And she feels it so acutely that she is not giving herself time to rest and recover. She is going to throw out her back making scones if she's not careful.
Yes, I completely agree. And I also don't understand. I don't understand why when McGonagall handed her the time turner, she wasn't like, also add more studying time, also add more sleeping time. And like, obviously, I do not understand the metaphysics of this time turner. Maybe that is not one of the things it allows. But if you give a child a tool like a time turner, it's like handing them a knife. You can't hand it to them and be like, best of luck. You have to teach them how to use it responsibly. And Hermione is not using this responsibly. She's using it dutifully, right? She is using it exactly how she was instructed to use it. But yeah, she's snapping at Ron and Harry. She is, you know, causing psychological and probably physical harm to herself through exhaustion. And again, this like gets back to something we were talking a little bit about in your opening story, Matt, about how There just need to be structures for rest. Yep. And if you're going to hand someone more work, you have to also take work off of their plate or hand them more time for rest somehow.
Right.
And yeah, I think we just see the physical toll that this is taking on Hermione in the scene. She doesn't usually snap at the boys.
Not usually.
They are theoretically expressing concern.
Right. I mean, usually the boys deserve it when she snaps at them.
Exactly.
Right. It's almost because Hermione is exactly the type of child that McGonagall would give a time turner to, that this should be the child that you teach to use the time turner, right? If you have the kind of child who is so driven and so anxious to do well and to work hard that they want to take a double class load or double up on exams and need time travel in order to accommodate that, then this is a child who you might also want to instruct or advise towards rest. So on the one hand, I agree with you. On the other hand, I'm a little bit not surprised because I think about that week when I threw out my back, and if somebody had given me an extra hour or an extra 2 hours, I probably wouldn't have taken a nap. I probably would have done the thing that I was behind on or the thing that I was putting off until next week, right? I think we can, and Hermione's absolutely there. I think we get into these places where we get so consumed with the kind of things that we have on our to-do list and so focused upon ticking the boxes and getting them off. The fact that rest isn't on that to-do list means that we just don't pay attention to it and we turn to the next thing and turn to the next thing until we shut down, right?
I don't want to leave this episode just like offering the platitudes of, believe it or not, you need rest. Rest is healthy, right? Like, and there are people doing really important work on this, right? You know, people who are doing research on the necessity of sleep, but there are also people doing social justice work around this. I know there's an organization called the Nap Ministry, which I admire a lot, that talks about how Black women in particular need to rest and the radical political and economic nature of that rest, that you're resisting capitalism, which doesn't value your time enough anyway by resting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love what you said about putting rest on your to-do list. It's something that I think about, you know, when I was a runner, the more you run, the more you learn about splits, right? That essentially you figure out what split works well for you. And a split is how long you walk for however long it is that you run. And so I was never an excellent runner. And so I had what they call a 4-1 split, where I would run for 4 minutes, walk for one, run for 4 minutes, walk for one. And it sounded so counterintuitive because I was trying to get my time down, right? I was trying to get a better time in my half marathons. And someone was like, well, what you need to do is walk more and you will get your time down. And it just felt like patently not true. And yet it somehow worked, right? For those 4 minutes, I was able to run faster. And sometimes I'd be able to run for 5 minutes at a time and then do a 1 minute split. But it really, staying to that 4-1 ratio, made me faster. And I don't want the justification to be you'll actually be more productive if you rest. I think rest is just like a human right. But I do think it's so terrifying that Hermione in this moment is being taught to maximize time past the time-space continuum.
Yeah.
And no one has said, can you please put rest on your checklist?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's back to that etymology, right? The thing that I've noted about that just sort of, at least in ancient Norse culture, there's this idea that rest is as immovable as time, right? And now we have in the Harry Potter world, well, actually time has become movable, but rest is still something that's not prioritized. It's sort of inheriting this sort of capitalist driven kind of worker bee sort of set of values into a world where time is movable, but rest is still not prioritized.
Just the other thing with rest, as someone who grew up adjacent to Orthodox Jewish community, something that always bothered me about the Sabbath is that often women aren't resting on the Sabbath because there's things that are not considered work are things like feeding your family. And it's less work. You're supposed to do a lot of the prep work before Shabbat and, you know, and it's more restful than other days. But I think that the less power you have, the less social capital you have, the less access to rest you have.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by MeUndies. Vanessa, my underwear drawer is like the Wild West of wardrobes.
Say more, Matt.
There's no rhyme or reason. Anything goes. I get gifts for like Christmas. There are seasonal underpants and socks. I have pairs from 5 different brands with 5 different fits. When I open my underwear drawer every morning, I have no idea what to expect. But I'll tell you what the best part of my underwear drawer is, Vanessa. It's the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies. When I open that underwear drawer, they're always what I reach for first. I know it's time to do the laundry when my unfavorite underwear is all that's left in the drawer.
Matt, my MeUndies underwear is my favorite underwear too. I actually have to do laundry today because I am wearing my last pair of clean MeUndies underwear. From black classics to fun, expressive prints, MeUndies has a look for everyone, and they come in sizes extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for every body. They also, and this is what I love about them, have unmatched comfort. MeUndies' signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug from your favorite sweater. It's breathable and stretchy and oh so comfy, making it ideal for all day wear. Get 20% off of your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/HPST. That's MeUndies.com/HPST for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
One of the things that I was thinking about also is just sort of how, when your to-do list is very long, like Hermione's is, like yours is, Vanessa, like mine can be sometimes. Sometimes figuring out how to get yourself some rest is a lot of work, right?
Totally.
Like the kind of structures and systems you need to put into place to make sure that you can have a week of vacation, right? Or have a couple of days off or whatever, or spend some time away. It just seems like more restful not to have to do all that stuff, right?
Totally.
Which is why something like, you know, when I threw out my back or when I injured my foot, when I broke my foot last fall, like those were times when I knew I needed rest at a kind of general level, but I thought about what it would take to get myself some. And it seemed like, yeah, this seems easier. I'll just do this until everything had to be canceled because I broke myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about that, given everything you said about rest also being a privilege, like the ability to take it and the ability to put plans in place to have other people protect it for you, to take up your load so you can take some rest. That's not something that all folks or even most folks have. And it's not something that, you know, the models of kind of success that we have in our culture, it's not something that they promote either.
I mean, I think we see a version of that in some ways similar and in some ways different with Hagrid. When the kids make it down to Hagrid's hut, Hagrid is like just walking around, right? He's not sitting staring lovingly at Buckbeak. He's just pacing and making tea and doesn't really know what to do. And part of me wants to be like, shh, Hagrid, like sit and rest. But I think that this energy comes from two places. One being like, something is about to happen and there's nothing I can do, but it feels like there has to be something I can do. And just that motion of, I know I can't stop this thing from happening, and yet I'm used to having some control over what happens in the world. And so I'm just going to keep moving in hopes that I fall upon the thing that will change all of this.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, and maybe this is about rest, it's about a fear of rest. He doesn't want to stop because he'll fall apart, right? Which is also something that I resonate with. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm scared of silence in my own thoughts, right? And so resting resting, to your point, structurally is exhausting and logistically is exhausting. But I also think resting is hard.
Yeah.
Like Hagrid can't. He can't just look at Buckbeak right now.
It just makes me think about the word restless, right? Like when someone's restless, you don't usually mean that they haven't slept well or they can't find a vacation. You usually mean that their body is causing them to move, right? Or their mind can't settle down for the kind of reasons you describe, for Hagrid's reasons, because he's afraid, he feels compelled to do something because he can't, there's nothing he can do, right? And if he were to stop, his mind would race to all the thoughts he doesn't want to have. And so he has to keep moving, yeah. This is just a final comment. I mean, it's sad at the end of the chapter because everyone's done with their exams, but Harry, Ron, and Hermione have this other task they have to perform. They can't, even though they've finished their exams, because they know what's going on with Buckbeak and Hagrid, they don't just get to relax by the lake like everybody else. They have to go and help Hagrid, which is, of course, the right choice. But it made me just think about the way the Hogwarts academic year is structured, where everyone finishes their exams and then everyone just kind of relaxes for a while until they see what their marks are, which is great. I mean, I understand why we don't do that at a place like Harvard, because here, when people finish their exams, they go home. And I, you know, the university probably doesn't want people hanging out in their rooms with not much to do except trouble. But I really like this idea of like, the exams are hard and we all went through this together. Let's everybody just take a week or a few days and enjoy being with each other to close the year, right? To me, that's so much a healthier way to think about how to close a year and how to process a lot of hard work to cap a year and what an appropriate goodbye should look like and all those things. I like this part of Hogwarts. I like that part of the year. And I'm sorry that, for a whole number of reasons, I'm sorry that Harry, Ron, and Hermione don't get to experience it because they're in the middle of this other kind of tragic and scary thing.
I couldn't agree more. Matt, it's now time for our sacred practice. This week, we're going to be doing Florilegia, the monastic practice, in which you and I each will pick a sentence that we loved from the text. We will share some context about it, why we picked it, and then we will put the two quotes in conversation with one another. What quote did you pick, Matt?
I picked a very short line from right toward the end of the chapter. The line is, "Harry felt strangely unreal." This is the trio have gone to visit Hagrid. They know the execution is about to happen, and they're in Hagrid's hut, and they see Fudge and Dumbledore and the executioner McNair and the committee member headed towards Hagrid's hut to execute Buckbeak, and Hagrid doesn't want them there for this, and they know that the end of Buckbeak is near and that there's not much they can do. Harry, Ron, and Hermione are sent out the back door in the invisibility cloak where they see Buckbeak, and as they go out of the garden, the text has this line where it says, "Harry felt strangely unreal." I know, I guess I selected the line just because it's a fairly simple description, and you know, it's not especially florid or metaphorical or something, but something about the fact that, you know, he's with his two friends under an invisibility cloak in this garden with this magical creature and the executioner's on the way. I think in these moments of extreme stress, sometimes it can feel kind of surreal. It can feel like this is not really happening. And in moments of grief, we have that as well, where you say, this is not real, this is not really happening. And sometimes you even ask yourself, like, or have to remind yourself, is this happening? This is happening, right? And I, even though it's a very short description, there's something about that sense was conjured for me by that line. Yeah, and that's why I picked it. What line did you select, Vanessa?
I picked a very different line. "Trying to bully their brains into concentrating while enticing wafts of summer air drafted in through the windows." I mean, why I picked it is very basic. It is a beautiful day here in the greater Boston area. And I have some things I have to do inside. And so I think that is why it sparkled up at me today. But this trying to bully our brains into concentrating, it's not just that you're trying to spend energy, you're spending energy trying to spend the right kind of energy, right? And so about this theme, it just really struck me. Like, your body wants to rest. Your body is being like called to the warm sun, and you are not only not doing that, but you're like, stop it, stop it. And yeah, so that is why it sparkled up at me. And what it is in the text is, you know, it's a beautiful June day and the kids are having to take their finals. And so they're trying to concentrate, even though every part of them wants to just be outside.
Yeah, I love that verb too, bully. Like, it seems like sometimes that's what you do to your brain too, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not just like telling your brain, no brain, it's not time for that. Like, you actually have to like be mean to your brain in order to try to distract yourself from what you would prefer to be doing.
So, Matt, our two sentences together are, Harry felt strangely unreal, trying to bully their brains into concentrating while enticing wafts of summer air drafted in through the windows. I mean, that just makes sense.
Well, that sounds like he's doing mind control. Like he is like in some state where he is trying to control the minds of others who are distracted by the lovely outdoors.
That's true.
Yeah.
I love that. Those are moments in which I feel unreal. When a group of people are looking at me like I'm the one in charge,
yeah.
I'm like, wait, what? Why? They shouldn't trust me. What do I know? I would imagine that would feel unreal for Harry.
Yeah, I think that's right. I also think there's something that feels unreal about that moment, right? I think it's a moment that you selected from this chapter because it's so identifiable and right now, which is the weather's lovely outside and we're inside recording a podcast, right? And there is something kind of weird about like getting between yourself and your own brain to say, no brain, we are staying inside, right? Like you kind of have to split yourself in two in order to talk to yourself out of the thing that you actually really want, right? And I guess that is kind of unreal.
Yeah. Okay, let's put these sentences in the opposite order now.
Flip them. Sounds great.
Trying to bully their brains into concentrating while enticing wafts of summer air drafted in through the windows, Harry felt strangely unreal. The thing that this is making me think about, Matt, is how human beings have decided to behave often as if the outside world is not real. And, you know, staying in despite good weather or whatever is pretending that the world isn't real, right? Or that the world doesn't have material impacts on you. It's more obvious in the winter. Again, it's more obvious that you need rest when your back literally breaks. And it's more obvious that weather should impact our behavior when there's 8 feet of snow on the ground and you literally can't get to the car, you probably shouldn't drive.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think that relates to this question of rest, right? Because we tend to think what's on our to-do list is the most real thing, but rain and shine and the outdoors are real too. And sometimes what we really need is rest. And we should just trust that.
Well, thank you for such a lovely florilegia, Matt.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Everybody, we have news. November of 2024, we are going to Cape Cod, Massachusetts, to treat Folklore and Evermore by Taylor Swift as sacred.
I'm so excited to lead this pilgrimage. These albums are such a different space for Taylor, where instead of
being about litigating a tabloid narrative that's been created around her and her life and asserting her own perspective. This was about her reinterpreting her own feelings and experiences through fictional lenses. And so we get to meet all of these characters, and some of them are like con men who fall in love with other con people, and others are like depressed middle-aged people who are like, if this is the best I can do, work with me here. And I am so excited to sort of talk about the kind of art that you get to create when you have privacy and you're free from scrutiny and self-examination. I'm so excited to explore all of that at the beautiful auto camp where everybody is going to have a private 1950s Airstream that's been converted into like a luxury hotel room complete with your own bathroom. It's just like the best glamping situation you could possibly imagine.
Which I've just wanted to glamp my whole life. I'm so excited. Everybody, this is going to be November 8th through 11th in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. You can find out more by going to readingandwalkingwith.com.
This week's voicemail is from Tatiana.
Hi, Vanessa and Matt and the Harry Potter Sacred Text team. My name's Tatiana, and I'm calling in to thank you for your reflections on Harry's early childhood trauma that I'm bringing sort of attention to the fact that we can remember things that happened to us when we were very little that perhaps we don't remember as an actual memory, but they imprint on us on some way. I think in Harry Potter, we often talk about book 5 as like the PTSD book. But I think that actually, as someone who has complex PTSD, which is someone who experiences repeated traumas over and over again, I see Harry through that lens, through the loss of his parents and his treatment at the Dursleys, and then all of the subsequent events. Last year, this past year has been very hard for me because both of my biological parents died, and it brought up a lot for me that I didn't know I would have to face yet. It was very painful, and there were times last year when I realized that it was sort of like I was dealing with the inner child was like a baby. It didn't have words, it just had pain, and I just had to walk around holding my inner baby and saying it's okay, and just holding myself while I was crying and saying it's okay. This is a blessing for Harry. I hope that he heals. And for anybody who's dealing with complex PTSD, it is very painful, but we have knowledge that there is hope for healing. And I wish that for everyone. Thank you.
Tatiana, thank you so much for your voice memo and for sharing a little bit of your story with us. And I'm glad that this reading of Harry meant something to you, and the blessing that you shared for Harry, I hope that you will receive from us too. We hope that you heal, and we know that there is hope for your healing, and that we are glad that you're part of this community and glad that we can support you in our small way as you move through your healing.
And Tatiana, I think that your words will be a blessing to many people in our community who need to hear them. I'm so sorry for your loss, and I'm really grateful for you sharing.
It's now time for us to remember those in our community who have been loved and lost. Barbara McCarthy, 90, a mother, dog lover, and avid reader. Zachary Todd, 32 weeks, born sleeping, a beautiful boy, forever loved. May Kirby, 94, a fiercely independent grandma. Margaret Valpel, 85, a patient and loving grandmother. Bob Walskag, 74, a grandfather and champion of dreamers. Harriet Johnson Naden, 84, a lover and giver of literature. Kathy Freeman, 68, a loving mom, daughter, and sister. Danielle Delator, 52, a friend and veteran philosopher revolutionary. Aaron Alistair, 20, a beloved brother and son who burned and blazed. Tom Hirth, 62, a father and lover of trees. Let light perpetual shine upon them. Vanessa, who are you blessing this week?
I'm blessing Ron. Ron has a reaction that is just like a textbook privilege reaction that does not see itself. When he finds out that Buckbeak is getting executed, he says, "They can't. I've spent ages reading up on the stuff for him. They can't just ignore it all." As if the crime of Buckbeak being killed is the waste of Ron's time. And I understand what Ron is up against, right? He's like, he is someone who in his life has always been rewarded for his hard work. When he decides to work hard, he gets a result from it. And so this is the first time he's confronting the idea that hard work does not equal results. And he's a kid. And so this is a completely reasonable assumption. And I think I want to bless him because I still have this instinct where I'm like, but I tried hard. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to constantly remind ourselves that hard work does not mean just rewards, and horrible things happen regardless of that. No one deserves the horrible things that happen to them. So I think there's a lot implicit in what Ron is saying here, and I see myself in it, and I don't love that I see myself in it. So a blessing for Ron and his evolving understanding of how the world works, and for myself in that same evolving understanding. Who do you want to bless?
I'd like to bless Dumbledore this week. I know Dumbledore is not perfect and makes a very small appearance in this chapter. And you know what? Maybe his obligation as the head of the school to accompany the Minister of Magic and the committee member and the executioner down to Hagrid's hut. But that's not what he tells Hagrid, and I don't think that's why he's coming. He sends Hagrid a note and says, "I'm going to be there because I want to be with you when this happens." And I, you know, like we often say in this podcast, Dumbledore is not perfect, but he's good to Hagrid. At least he tries to be good to Hagrid. He could be better, but he tries to be good to Hagrid. And in this moment when Hagrid needs him, Hagrid feels like he can count on him, and that's because he can, because Dumbledore is going to show up for him. So blessings to Dumbledore and to everybody who shows up. Vanessa, next week we are reading Book 3, Chapter 17, Cat, Rat, and Dog, through the theme of partnership.
Ooh, fun. I love partnerships.
Before we close, everyone, we have a voice memo from Nora in Jacksonville, Florida, who's going to tell you all about our wonderful Patreon perks. If you'd like to learn more about supporting us through Patreon or enjoy some of the wonderful things that Nora's going to tell you about, go to patreon.com/HarryPotterSacredText.
This is Nora in Jacksonville, Florida. My family and I love listening to this podcast. It has become a really important part of our weekly ritual to read the chapter, talk about the theme of the week, and then listen to the podcast together. We support Harry Potter and the Sacred Text on Patreon because it means a lot to us to have this podcast in our life, and we want it to stay around for as long as possible, and we want to make sure that everyone who works on it is able to support themselves and keep making this amazing project.
Matt, we just have one announcement before we give our thanks, which is that we are in the middle of a big Patreon push in honor of my 40th birthday. That's right, I'm middle-aged, and the way you can thank me is by hearing me mess up a lot in our blooper reels. We hope that you join us on Patreon at patreon.com/HarryPotterSacredText.
This has been a Not Sorry production, and Not Sorry is a feminist production company. Our executive producer is Ariana Nettleman. We are edited and produced by AJ Yaramas. Our engineer is Erica Wong. Our music is by Ivan Paisal and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast. Thanks this week to Tatiana for their blessing and voice memo. Thanks to Lara Glass, Julia Argy, Gabby Iori, Nikki Zoltan, Catherine DeKyle, Stephanie Paulsell, and all of you who sent in the names of your loved ones this week.
And I was like, what? I can't believe she actually killed Buckbeak.
Or did she?
Dun, dun, dun.
Tune in next week, listeners, for the next exciting episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.